Hello everyone, it's Lucy Alderson, Tech and Global Reporter here, and welcome to this very special EG Property podcast on EG's 2020 Mental Health Survey results. We launched our second annual Mental Health Survey in September this year to gather insight into the mental health of property's workforce and received nearly 300 responses. During a year when the mental health of millions has been tested under such unprecedented circumstances, we wanted to investigate how COVID has affected the mental health and well-being of the real estate sector, and we also wanted to find out whether the industry has made improvements since last year's survey, which revealed that 1 in 4 property professionals have considered suicide and that stigma was still very much an issue. The results from this year's survey make for quite a worrying read. Headline statistics are, around 67% of workers said COVID has had a negative impact on their mental health. Over half of respondents said their mental health has not improved or had worsened since last year. And 53% said working from home has had a negative impact on their mental health. I sat down with Avison Young, UK Principal and President Jason Sibthorpe, the Crown Estate's Head of HSE and Wellbeing, Henrietta Frater, and Hollis HR partner, Melanie Ulrich, to dig deeper into the survey results.
Hello, everyone. How are we all doing?
Hi, Lucy.
Hi.
Great, thank you.
Great. Okay, well, just for the benefit of listeners, if you could just outline a little bit more about your role, that would be great. Jason, how about we start with you?
Yeah, happy to kick off, and thank you for having me here on this important topic. So my role, with a very grand American title of UK president, is to drive and run the UK operations of Avison Young, but my more important title is principal, which identifies me as a fellow partner. So I have 140 fellow partners across the UK business, and we all hopefully collaborate effectively together to drive the UK business. And obviously we are a real estate advisory firm, obviously very reliant on our clients and their activity during this difficult period of COVID, but proving to be resilient and productive nonetheless.
Brilliant. And Henrietta, if we could go over to you now.
Yeah, sure. So I lead on health, safety, environment and wellbeing at the Crown Estate. So that's really about creating and driving their health and safety and wellbing strategy through. We've got a whole team of health and safety, environment and wellbeing business partners. And we've got a very diverse business at the Crown Estate. So we've got our beautiful Winterbrake Park over to our energy, mineral and infrastructure part of the business. And then we have a lot of property and development activity as well.
Brilliant. And then Melanie.
Great. Hi. I am partner in charge of HR, all things people and culture at Hollis. And obviously that includes everything to do with wellbeing and health of employees as well.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for joining me on this podcast. And It is a very special podcast. We are here today to discuss EG's 2020 mental health survey results. And before we go kind of deeper into the statistics, I would just like to kind of outline a little bit more about why and how we ran the survey. So we decided last year to put out an annual mental health survey each year to gather data on the industry's state of mental health. And each survey will be a benchmark to measure to what extent progress in addressing and tackling more poor mental health in the industry has changed. And this is our second survey, and we'll be discussing the results. So all responses have been kept completely anonymous, and 266 property professionals gave their views and experiences of mental health working in real estate. And I picked out a selection of statistics that we'll all be discussing in today's podcast, but it isn't an exhaustive list, so you can find a full rundown of results in this week's issue of EG or online. So first off, I just wanted to discuss really how COVID has impacted the mental health of property's workforce. It's been an exceptionally kind of unprecedented, I know everybody says that word a lot, but it has been unprecedented, uncertain, such a tricky year. And it's unsurprising really, but this has had an impact on real estate's workforce. So headline statistic from our survey results here is that 2/3 of real estate professionals said the impact of COVID-19 on their working life has had an impact, negative effect on their mental health. And over half of respondents said their state of mental health had not improved since last year. So this is a question for everyone. You know, these are really quite high statistics. Are you surprised by how high these are? How about Jason, we start with you.
Yeah, thanks, Lucy. So it's troubling, but I don't think it is that surprising to see that 67% of respondents are struggling. And I do think that perhaps that the property industry is struggling more than many other professions. I believe a recent UK study by the Mental Health Foundation showed that of people surveyed across the nation, 64% say they're coping well. I think what's happening within the property industry is that we have pared back our work to the very basic core tasks, and that's why we are all feeling and being productive. But the, I guess, the wider routines, the perks, the interactions that form part of our working lives that allow us to let off steam and add variety, they've been eroded to leave us in this high pressure situation for a long period of time. So for an industry such as ours that is perhaps traditionally sociable and human interaction reliant, we are, I believe, perhaps suffering more than the national average.
And Henrietta, what do you feel about that?
Yeah, I agree. I think that it came so quickly. There's quite a lot of rapid change. So I think that was a lot for everyone, irrespective of kind of your role, really, to get your head around. I think it's accelerated a lot of changes, structural changes that were happening anyway. So the fact that we can work much more effectively remotely is a massive positive. But I think comes with that lots of impact on people in terms of how they're using technology and the fact that they feel kind of like they're on 24/7. You can't switch off as easy and effectively. And I think we were in a situation where there were lovely kind of bookends to the day. So kind of walking into the office in the morning and then leaving at night, kind of got that sense that, you know, the day was, you'd done a good job and the day was over. And if you carried on doing a few bits and bobs and sent a few emails, that was kind of in addition, but at least you'd kind of done your core. Whereas now, we just don't have that natural structure in our day or in our week. And I think that definitely takes its toll as well.
Yeah. And Melanie, what do you think about these statistics?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, not surprising. I agree both with Jason and Henrietta. And I think also that I think in the beginning when it was all new and it was all, I mean, dare I say it, kind of exciting in a very odd way, in that it was all new and there was adrenaline going. I think it's gone on now for so long, and I think I think that is really impacting people. So whereas the novelty of working from home and all of the getting used to all of that was exactly that, it was a novelty. Now I think, you know, that it has become much, much harder for people, and the reality of not having all of those social things that Jason was talking about and not all the perks that come with working in the property industry. You know, and I did hear a statistic actually where it said that employers are getting 1.2 hours more per employee per day than they were when people weren't working from home. And, you know, that ultimately will take its toll. That's a lot. That means productivity is high. But of course, that's coming from somewhere. And I think it is taking its toll on people and the mental health of the group.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you say that, because that is one that the kind of feeling of the novelty well and truly wearing off really did come through in the survey statistics. So one of the main reasons why people said their mental health had deteriorated was because they felt lockdown had started with their colleagues feeling, you know, quite sympathetic and empathetic to others. You know, the situation was so unprecedented. But as lockdown became more kind of normal, in quote marks, it felt like a lot of people's situations kind of began to deteriorate somewhat. So one respondent here kind of, I'm going to read out a quote to you all. I think they capture this really nicely. They said, "In the beginning, lockdown didn't affect my mental health. However, as time went on, there was less and less communication between my team. I found them harder to get hold of, less supportive and less easy to work with. It started to impact me more and more." So this is an open question to everybody, really. Kind of, what do we all think about this? You know, how difficult has it been to provide that long-term and sustained support over, you know, the course of this pandemic? And do you think that the companies and kind of the property industry at whole has done this successfully?
I think a lot of people would resonate with that comment, actually. I mean, I think through technology, it's much harder to kind of reach out to people. If you look at kind of the breakdown of how you take in information, body language forms a huge part of that. And we are social animals at the end of the day. So those kind of water cooler chats and being able to grab a coffee or seeing somebody on the stairs and connect with them, I think that just naturally in itself forms community and a sense of being part of a community within an organization. When you lose that, it's so much harder to then reach out to people and widen your network as well. So if you've got new people joining the organization, it's much harder to, it takes a lot more energy to make sure that you're driving those connections. And I think it is important that employers think about how they can create those opportunities and to kind of put more onus on them and do more to build that, because I think it's definitely something that creates a successful organisation is to feel part of a community within it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree that there's something else I'd add to that would be that I think that the managers have a huge responsibility, and let's not forget that they too may also be having struggles, their own personal struggles. But they have a huge responsibility to really understand their team and stay in touch with their team really closely, because, you know, everybody isn't the same. Some people have difficulty switching off at the end of the day. Some people like to work in the middle of the night because they've got kids running around during the day. Others need structure and routine. Some people are, you know, verging on burning out if they don't be careful. So it's, you know, you really do need to understand people's situations, and that's quite a lot of work for somebody to manage remotely. And there's the whole thing about, you know, you see somebody on video and they say they're fine, etc. The minute they switch off, they could be, you know, they could be really grumpy. If you were sat next to them, you'd see that. But it's very difficult as a manager, I think, to keep on top of that. And especially if you, as I say, if you consider the fact that they themselves may well be struggling. So I think it's been tough.
Yeah, can I add to that, Lucy? I mean, this point is critical, and the engagement that comes from within the business to colleagues is genuinely is critical, and there are so many aspects to it. And we mustn't also forget that many colleagues in many companies, ours included, were placed on furlough. Now, on one hand, you might think, oh, well, you've got some time to do what you want to do around your space, not worry about work. But the reality is, a lot of people on furlough, their mental health was being challenged as well, because they were then being, you know, having concerns about when would they be coming back, would they be coming back. And obviously across the industry, we have seen, sadly, a number of people lose their roles during this period of time as well. I think what's absolutely key is for businesses to do all they possibly can around this time through the engagement is to remove the anxiety as much as possible. So to ensure that we're not pushing too hard in terms of the hours that people are working, to remind people that it is fine to just take time out during the day and go for a walk or whatever form of exercise that you wish to do that helps get your brain centered as well. So the level of engagement, the type of engagement, and any activity that just helps remove the daily anxieties that we all face has been so important during this period. And remembering that as an industry, we're going through such change anyway, not just in terms of what's happening out there in terms of technology and our response to D&I and sustainability, but you've got an industry where there's still a lot of traditionalists who would perhaps, you know, respect presenteeism, and then right down to the kind of the digital age where it's work anytime, anywhere. and the importance of recognizing that everyone is different, and being respectful and understanding of all of those situations is difficult, but it's so important.
I'm just going to pick up on that, the kind of redundancy and the furloughs point, Jason, that you just mentioned, because that was kind of one of the biggest drivers of poor mental health over lockdown that a lot of our survey respondents voiced. So I'm just going to read one quote here from one survey respondent, which says, "The pressure of my job has intensified during lockdown. Working from home has no let up, and the management board is trying to keep the business running whilst cutting staff and salaries." And there's been widespread redundancy programs throughout property, and it kind of plays into a background amid, you know, redundancy levels nationally are at an all-time high. It's quite a worrying time for people. So how do companies navigate that really tough path of letting people go whilst still keeping mental health and well-being in mind? And obviously, you know, it will affect the mental health of people who might not necessarily have lost their jobs, but still feel quite unstable and still feel like they're lacking that job security. It would be interesting to get your thoughts first, Jason.
Yeah, so there's no easy answer, and clearly many difficult decisions have had to be made across the industry over the past months. And it's just a point of ensuring that when you make those decisions, they are based in fact, they are considerate to the situation that the business is in and not reactionary, and you take the time to really assess what needs to be done. And then when you have to take some of that difficult action, how you engage with the individuals, how you ensure that through the process they're treated fairly, the level of support that you can give to individuals post leaving the business as well is significant, because you can still help with referrals, with training, with development. There are a number of things you can do to ensure that you can play a positive part going forward. But that said, and I'm not trying to sugarcoat anything here, because clearly if someone loses their role, it's an incredibly difficult situation, and you can't really make it a whole lot better. And of course, for everyone that remains within the business, it's an ongoing concern for them as well, because yes, maybe the workload has intensified. Maybe there are still feelings of what's happening next. I do believe, and I'm very hopeful that this will apply now to our industry in the whole, that we're at a stage now where we are clearly seeing light. The vaccine on the horizon is a significant plus. It doesn't dismiss the fact that we are going to still have a challenging winter. But I think businesses have now set themselves up to cope with where we're at and what's immediately in front of us. So colleagues and the industry as a whole, I think, should feel more optimistic now about what comes next, and we can start to build back with confidence around how we're responding to this situation.
Brilliant. And Henrietta and Melanie, do you have anything to add in terms of that kind of difficult path to tread in terms of, you know, unfortunately letting people go while still keeping mental health and well-being in mind?
I think exactly as Jason said, I think it's incredibly challenging, and it's about recognizing just how difficult it is. I think everybody to some degree is connected probably to somebody that has that level of uncertainty or has experienced it, and therefore I think operating with real empathy as an organization is absolutely critical. Being as transparent and honest as possible is again really, really important. And exactly as Jason said, that kind of wraparound care that you can provide in the, you know, if that situation does happen and you have to navigate through it, making sure that person gets as much support as the company can provide, I think is really, really important.
Yeah, and I very comprehensive answers to that. I'm little to add to that, really. I think communication is key. A lot of anxiety around this sort of subject comes from just not knowing, and not knowing whether it's going to happen or if it does, what it will be. So I think communicating as early and as much as you can, so that people aren't in those anxious states, it is important too.
Okay, great. And just got another headline statistic here. So 44% said their mental health was better working from home compared to the office. But there seems to be a bit of a tension here, because if a majority are saying that COVID and lockdown has made them feel isolated and has had a negative impact on their mental health. But then again, half are saying that their mental health is better as a result of remote working. Is there any way we can make sense of this tension? Like, what are the benefits and setbacks of working remotely more often?
I think it's a great opportunity, and it's for many people to spend more time connected to their family. And I know that there's been a massive increase in people buying dogs, for example, which is lovely. And just having more control over your space, because I think, you know, you can control your environment. You don't have to worry about the, you know, you can turn the heating off if you want to. And for some people, that they can have some more kind of quiet, reflective, focused work if they were struggling in an open plan office, and being able to just have more control over your day. I think, you know, from that perspective, that brings some real positives. And also there is some changes that are happening within the property industry anyway, in terms of responding to the crisis, in terms of how we design differently. There's lots of opportunity to kind of rethink how we do work and how we can make sure that people can use technology more effectively. You know, things like creating contactless pathways so that we don't have as much touch points. There's lots of opportunity to really kind of evolve the spaces that we will be working in future. So there are some kind of positive aspects to it as well.
Mm. I mean, from my perspective, I think this is one of the most exciting outputs of what's been a very difficult period of time. You know, the ability for us to learn from what we've seen from this working from home period, and then create the balance that's so relevant for each business as we return to the offices on a more regular basis. But as I mentioned earlier, you know, we don't live in a world anymore, I don't believe, where it's about presenteeism. It is about output and the confidence we can now take that people can be resilient and productive both in and out of the office. It's a huge opportunity to genuinely tackle the work-life balance. I think very importantly, it gives us an opportunity to accelerate what we're doing around the diversity and inclusion measures in our industry, which clearly we need to continually improve somewhat dramatically. The ability now to respond to single parents, the ability to look at how we are responding to diversity in terms of disability. The ability to work from both home and office is going to open up so many opportunities for us to create genuine agility with all of our colleagues, and I think that's a very exciting opportunity for us.
Brilliant. Okay, and just keeping on that statistic, that 44% say their mental health is better working from home. What kind of impact does this have on the future of the office? You know, do you think we will have to do some kind of radical rethinking on how and where we're working?
This is a huge part of what we're tackling, and we're providing advice to clients with our workplace strategy teams. I think it's very important. There are lots of people right now who are looking at and assessing and trying to make real estate decisions before they've defined their people policies, their operational strategies, their growth strategies. And I think it's fundamental that businesses really understand how their workforce can operate and what level of flexibility you can have. You know, we have some clients who are telling their colleagues they won't be allowed to work in the office 5 days a week because they want to positively push forward with a dual work from home, work from office strategy that will actually then create the ability to reduce the accommodation costs significantly within their business. So it's going to be fantastic and fascinating to see how this all unfolds in the coming months. And there won't be one size fits all, and different industries, different professions, maybe even different regions will have a different response to how this all operates. But as I say, it's fundamental for all businesses to think about your people policy, your operational policy, and your growth policy before you start making too many real estate decisions.
Mm. And Henrietta and Melanie, you know, do you think, you know, there is kind of scope to do some radical rethinking on how we work, where we're working, kind of the rise of a flexible working agenda?
I think I think it has accelerated, as I said earlier, some structural changes, definitely. I think there was already kind of a shift towards sort of home working, and I think that's benefited, exactly as Jason said, so many people. And I think it's going to encourage us to think very differently about how we support the diversity within our organisations to make sure that, you know, people can have a much better work-life balance. And also not necessarily be in some locations just simply because they feel that they ought to be there. There's kind of real value being there. Having said that, I think there's nothing that can replace that physical contact with other people. I think we, you know, hormonally it has an impact on us when we're around other people, and that we can make contact with people. So I think as organizations we need to think about how we can still provide opportunities for people to do that. I think that's really important. And also technology, I think there's a huge opportunity with technology, because some of the virtual reality, augmented reality, I mean, even just our ability to use some software like Teams and Zoom better, more effectively, just demonstrated just how rapidly these things can really support us to work in a different way.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it's been a really radical and welcome boost to move things along very quickly, much quicker than one could have anticipated, to get people working from home and remotely and opening up the whole flexible thing. And I think that employers really embracing that flexibility has really helped with people's mental health as well, you know, there are some people who've got a lot of commitments at home and things like that, so they need the flexibility. But I think going forward, we as an industry do need to be flexible and to give people options, because we've proved that it's possible, and in order for people to do to work to their best, basically, then some sort of flexible option I think is going to be the way forward.
Mm. Okay, brilliant. And there are a couple of statistics which do show that progress have been made. One is that there does seem to be a big jump in terms of how we're talking about mental health and seeking help as well. So 61% of property professionals said they would feel comfortable talking to their employer about their mental health, which was up 20 percentage points since last year's survey. So just curious to get your thoughts, really. I mean, do you think that this year, through dealing with COVID, has had to make us better about talking about mental health? And we have had to kind of make that extra effort to reach out and make sure that people are okay whilst we've all been separated.
I think it's been, that's just a fantastic statistic, or improvement, should I say, that so many people would be comfortable in comparison to, you know, the previous survey. So that's great. I think in the world generally, it is, you know, you hear people talking about mental health, dropping into conversations so much more than it ever has been before. And, you know, it's fantastic to hear it being discussed and sort of normalised, really, in so many instances. So I think that's absolutely fantastic. And I think that, yeah, it's been absolutely critical that we've considered people's mental health over this whole COVID episode. Yeah, so that doesn't surprise me, but it's brilliant to hear.
Yeah, I think this has been and will be looked back on as a transformational year for so many reasons, not just within our industry, but across society. We've had so much happened this year, and I think we challenge ourselves rightly on a daily basis about the things we need to do to improve society, to improve workplace culture. And at its core, it's always about communication. It's always bringing subjects like mental health to the table, so you speak about it on a regular basis. And we've had to get far better in our industry at being comfortable with the uncomfortable conversations, and mental health has been one of those where wrongly, historically, there's been stigma attached to it. And I think we are absolutely removing that now. And so the communication between colleagues is great. I think it is also important that we put in place formal communication if individuals need specialist dialogue. And at Avison Young, for example, we have employee assistant programs, and we've also been holding global town halls and inviting keynote speakers, mental health experts to help everyone understand what you can do to tackle any difficulties you're facing. So yeah, I'm very optimistic that we will look back at 2020 and despite all the challenges and the horrific situation that it's created, it will be transformational in terms of how we tackle the difficult situations that existed within our workplace. And we will show that this was the catalyst to really make meaningful progress.
I'd really support that. I think it's a huge opportunity, actually, and we need to take the opportunity to keep the momentum going and in really understanding mental health to a much greater depth than we ever have before. I think it's an opportunity to do much more preventative work with our employees, you know, really building up psychological fitness and understanding about how all the different components of that and how that can be really strengthened. I think it'll also support us in being much better at early intervention when people do need support and help, and also support us in being better at having more diverse recruitment and really understanding the breadth of kind of, you know, different experiences that people are, you know, that people have.
Okay, that's brilliant. And I'm going to ask two final questions. First of which is a little somber, but we'll leave on a high, I promise. But last year, when we released our mental health survey results for 2019, property leaders described the situation as kind of facing a mental health epidemic. And I just want to see whether you think that this crisis may have heightened even more as a result of COVID this year, and how can we make sure that next year we kind of deal with the potential mental health fallout which has been created potentially by this year. Henrietta, how about you?
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair reflection. I think that a lot of people obviously have been struggling a lot. I think there's so much uncertainty that causes anxiety, you know, whether you already felt anxious about something, having so much uncertainty around the world has been incredibly challenging. And I think added to that, social isolation make it incredibly hard for people to develop good coping strategies, because having a strong social network, being able to kind of change your physical environment and go into the office and be around other people, is really healthy to have that kind of diversity in your day and being able to spend time with people and reach out. So that having that taken away, not being able to engage with people as much, I think is obviously definitely going to have an impact. I think organisations need to make sure that they keep on resourcing this, that the right support's in place, and also that leaders keep talking about it and keep prioritising it as an issue to resource and talk about.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the other thing is that as I said before, it's gone on for a while now, and we're going into the winter, and I think there's an awful lot that people coped with before that they may be finding hard to cope with again. And the other day I was talking to somebody who said the first lockdown, I was never fit. I've never been fitter. I was running every day. I've run more than I've ever have. This time, I'm reaching for the chocolate hobnobs. And, you know, which is kind of amusing. But on the other hand, it's sort of indicative of really, and then physical health, as we all know, is so important to mental health. And if people are sort of feeling like that and sort of giving up in a way on all of those sort of strategies, the coping strategies that they had before, then that's a worry. So I think, you know, potentially things could be worse. So I agree with Henrietta. Employers have just got to do everything they can to encourage people to remain resilient and to show them what resilience is, and to constantly keep the subject and the ways of maintaining good mental health, you know, keep those subjects going.
I agree entirely, and all I would add is that we have to recognise this is a perpetual challenge. This isn't ever going to go away. We will continue to make improvements, I'm sure, but we have to keep the momentum and recognise that this will always be on the agenda for us to tackle as employers. We've got to make sure that we've always got those support networks in place for our colleagues.
Can I just add, actually, that I think one of the interesting things has been that because we've all been on video and we can actually see into people's lives more than we've ever been able to before. So in some ways, you can see sometimes at one point you could even see the children running around in the background. So, which is endearing on the one hand, but it does give you a real view on someone's life. And that, I think, has helped with people coming forward and being honest and a bit more upfront about how they're feeling and what's actually happening. So which is interesting. And I just thought I'd add that because I think it's an important point.
Yeah, no, thank you. It definitely is. And I said we'd end on kind of an uplifting note, and I hope that this will be. But I would like to hear what your biggest mental health takeaway has been from navigating through this crazy year, and how it will help guide your and the company's approach to mental health in the next year and in the years to come as well.
Biggest takeaway.
I think for me, that's just the power of leadership, absolutely. We're just deeply privileged in my organisation to have exceptional leaders that have put so much attention and focus on talking about this and creating a space, a safe place for people to be able to talk about it. And I think, you know, the impact that's had is huge.
I would agree. It is all about creating that safe place. It is about that continuous communication, the continuous support, recognizing, remembering, understanding that everybody is different. Everybody has very personal situations. There is no one solution for any across a group of individuals. So respecting that is absolutely key. I feel privileged that I've had a year to be in a leadership position and have that opportunity to engage with colleagues in a different way. And it's so important that as we go into 2021, and as hopefully we do start to get back to some level of normalcy and we do start to have far more physical interactions with our colleagues again, we mustn't lose the momentum in terms of the strength and breadth of communication that I think all firms have put in place over this period of time, because based on our survey results and the direct feedback that I get, that engagement is what has made a huge difference. And it gives anybody a warmer feeling when you can see that you are helping to make a difference.
Okay, that's brilliant. I know that I said that that was the last question, but I'm actually going to ask another one. Because I think this question actually potentially could help someone and would be useful for us all to know, really. In terms of, you know, if any one of us sees a colleague kind of on a Zoom call struggling somewhat, maybe that they're not their usual selves, and you're concerned about their mental health. How should you go about kind of raising this, asking if they're okay? What are the best steps to take for those people who, you know, want to help and are concerned about someone else? Henrietta, let's start with you and then make our way around.
I think it's really important to reach out. And I think now more than ever, it's important to I think having as many kind of opportunities at work to be able to have kind of informal conversations and have it really normalised that, you know, there's lots of opportunities to engage with people makes that so much easier to have those conversations. I think when we've set up some things at the Crown Estate which have been hopefully really, really helpful to people, such as like buddy schemes, so that people are calling each other and it's become part and parcel. So being able to say, are you okay? How are you doing? It's really become normalised. So it's not suddenly going to hopefully make somebody feel uncomfortable, because it's just become part of our culture to be able to do that more effectively and just more easily. And I think that really helps.
Yeah, I there's not much to add. I don't hesitate to reach out. Absolutely. You know, put that call in immediately. If you don't feel you're the right person, then find the right person to create that engagement. Remember when you make the call that not everybody feels comfortable having the conversation. So keep that initial conversation, you know, relatively light and just, you know, say you're checking in, see how they're doing, and then just see how the conversation develops. And clearly, if you get a response where there are some challenges, you can do what you can in terms of helping as an individual. But then that, I think the importance at times where perhaps if there's any deeper rooted challenges, you then do need to bring in the specialists, bring in those mental health first aiders, so individuals can get, you know, direct advice. But just never hesitate to reach out.
Yeah, not much to add to that, I'm afraid. And obviously, if you don't get very far the first time, don't just leave it. You know, it may be that there's someone else who's better to talk to that person or to whom that they may open up. But, you know, find another reason to get in touch with them again and ask them. And you may catch them in a more open, you know, feeling more open about it. So don't give up on it, basically, is what I would say as well.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, I think that's a really good place to end things. And hopefully this conversation will have provided, you know, a lot of takeaways, some practical tips and some really helpful advice to take away from this. So thank you all for joining me. I really appreciate your time and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.